stupid. Hello? Audio on? Hey, am I on?
You're on.
All right, thank you. My name is Andrew Aronson. I am a solution architect with our America's Cloud Services Group, which means that I help customers plan and onboard to Office 365. Today we're going to talk about Exchange Hybrid. We're going to announce some new things for you. We have quite an in-depth session. We've got the right people to talk about it. So with that, let's give a little short introduction.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ronald Dhruva. I'm the program manager for the Hybrid Configuration Wizard, which you all love and like to use a lot.
And I'm Tim Heaney. I'm the supportability program manager. That is a thorn in his side.
So thanks for coming to Mac. We hope we're having a good time. I like to joke that at Mac, we have the people who are still doing things, right? You go to the SharePoint conference, and it's all partners and trying to sell stuff. And the Link conference has more vendors and partners trying to show and sell stuff. But at Exchange, people live and work and eat and breathe and Outlook all day long or on their phones. And it's really thanks to all of you that that's been such a popular product the last 20 years and keeping the world go around. We've had some highlights at Mac. We got free tablets. Hope you guys enjoy that. We've had some, pardon? Mic is off? It should be on. No, I'm sure. I don't know. It might be my voice. He's turning the volume up in the back. All right. We've had some low lights at Mac, maybe some audio issues, or if you went to the public folder session this morning. I don't know if anybody saw that one. We're well aware. Anyway, we're working on that one. We hope you like the hybrid session. So we put a lot of time into this one. We've got some animated slides for you. We've got some content to show, and we'll walk you through. So, hybrid is one of your options to migrate to Office 365. There's other options. We see some organizations at times do what we call a staged migration or a cutover migration. Cutover says you're going to move everybody at once to Office 365. We can do that with some CSV files. We can do that with other methods, right? But essentially, we're going to bring the data over a short period of time, maybe a night, maybe a weekend, depending on the number of people we're talking about. And we can onboard those folks into an Office 365 tenant. This works, obviously, with down-level platforms, for example, Exchange 2003 or prior. We can do some of these cutover-style migrations. If you have a few more people and you want to do it in batches and have a little pilot, we have a staged migration option that provides additional functionality over a cutover. We just want to highlight these because some people assume that if I have Exchange, I need to go to hybrid to go to Office 365. It's not the case. We do have some simpler ones that don't require setting up directory synchronization, setting up authentication, whether that be password sync or Active Directory Federation servers, and setting up Exchange Hybrid. Going through that process, however, of adding in directory synchronization, some authentication capabilities, and Exchange Hybrid does give you a significantly more robust experience when moving to Exchange Online in Office 365, as now you have what we call rich coexistence. People can see things such as free busy back and forth. We can have secure mail flow between both organizations. Users, in essence, will not be aware of whether their mailbox is online or on-prem. From their perspective, ActiveSync works, Outlook works. When we move the mailbox back and forth, everything will always be updated appropriately. So most of this session, right, we're going to spend talking about hybrid. We did want to give you that quick overview that it's not required, right? However, you get a lot more benefits when you go with an Exchange Hybrid migration. Out of curiosity, how many people here have deployed an Exchange Hybrid environment with an Office 365? Wow. Like, so having delivered this for a couple of years, right, if we had asked prior, first of all, especially with HA going on next door, right, we might have had 10 people show up to the session to see what this hybrid thing was about in Office 365. We were actually quite surprised to see so many of you come in to see the hybrid experience. Hybrid is really based on this concept of a trust relationship between your on-prem Exchange organization and your Office 365 tenant. We'll talk a little bit more about highlight later on how that trust relationship will kind of change over the next several months to a year or so. Today, it's using something called a federated trust, very similar to if you used Exchange 2010 and wanted to set up free busy using the Microsoft Federation Gateway. We create this federated trust relationship, and that allows us to have these rich hybrid capabilities such as free busy, calendar sharing, right? For some organizations, having a mailbox on-prem but an archive mailbox in Office 365, all of these scenarios are unblocked once we create that trust relationship between our Exchange on-prem organization and our Office 365 tenant. One of the other core principles that we have is we try to have a unified administration experience. You can see this with Exchange 2010 and Exchange 2013, where you can manage both your tenant and your on-prem organization using the same set of tools. So you shouldn't have to relearn your job role, right, moving to Office 365. Our role there, our concept is to free you up from the operations tasks and focus on enabling the business. Give them larger mailboxes. Give them capabilities. Explain what they can do, right? Highlight to those business users what these new features are, things such as DLP or RMS, and sort of move up the stack, so to speak, in terms of creating that business awareness of what the functionality is that you're providing as an Exchange admin inside of the organization. One of the telling factors, really, about usage of Exchange is the concept of mailbox sizes. For those of you who have been managing mail for a while, it was 10 megs, right, and 25 megs and 50 megs, and they've been growing over time to 100 megs, to a couple hundred megs, to a gig, to several gigs, to even a few years ago, we would see firms that had hold policies or whatnot that were getting to the 20 or 30 gigs per user. I always stop and sort of pause here. Do you know what the largest mailbox that we've seen in production on Exchange over the past several years is? Anybody want to throw a guess out there? We hear 100 gigs is common. Usually the first one, you're off by an order of magnitude in that case. We have seen a terabyte mailbox running on Exchange. It was actually only uncovered because in the service, we kind of rebalance and do mailbox moves regularly to offset hotspots and ensure that we have availability and patch the other boxes, for example, or ensure the boxes have the most recent set of updates on them. One of the moves, mailbox moves, was failing, and in the service, we go through escalations, right, to sort of bring in our engineering talent to find out what's behind the scenes and happening, and we assume it's a mailbox move issue because the move is failing and the move team looks at the logs. There is no issue with the move. They do some additional research, and it turns out the target drive was out of space because it was a 1 terabyte mailbox, right? No one had ever even realized that that had grown to be. But the point of the story, right, is that as users use these mailboxes to store all their content, and we have this process of moving mailboxes both internally or to Office 365 or rebalancing inside, we needed to come up with an online move experience. We don't want you to be moving 20 gigs and have the user offline for several hours or a day or two during that move process. And so in Exchange 2007, right, we introduced the concept of online mailbox moves. And with the hybrid experience, we preserve this concept of an online move to and from Office 365. You have that flexibility. You can move the mail around. Users continue to work. At the end of that, depending on their Outlook client version and the updates you have, they may not even get a message. They may get a message that says Outlook's made a change, or your administrator's made a change, require you to restart Outlook. Point being, right, we use MRS. Hybrid is that option that gives you the, give them the large mailboxes. We can do the moves in the back end, make it work out to where the need best suits the business, and keep that user operational during that experience. Secure mail flow is the other aspect. We don't want to move people to Office 365 if it's going to degrade their security experience. Our premise there, right, is that if you're going to trust us with your data, which in many cases is probably one of the most valuable assets an organization has after the people, right, that work there, that we have to do the due diligence on Microsoft's side to ensure that data is protected and secure. We have the onus, right, of we're only as good as our last failure, or also we make a big mistake there and the entire cloud model is at risk. And so we have done a lot of due diligence to make sure that we have the best technology, the best people, and the best process from a security perspective. This means that when you are sending mail to and from Office 365, we want all that traffic to be encrypted. We want you to be able to know where and how that mail is flowing between your organization and Office 365. We'll use TLS to encrypt all those. Hybrid Compatibility Wizard will help you set up the connectors required for that mail flow to and from Office 365. And we'll ensure that that mail is always encrypted, both in transit and at rest in the service itself. So now that you know that hybrid brings you some great benefits, let's talk a little bit more about what's happening behind the scenes, what we need to do to make that work or to get that deployed. The first part of hybrid, and before we ever go to set up or configure Exchange Hybrid, is the concept of directory synchronization. We don't want that first user that you move to your Office 365 tenant to have an address list with a one person in it, right? They should be able to see the entire organization, whether they're on-prem or whether they're online. DirSync is our tool of choice for replicating your on-prem Active Directory environment to Office 365. You can use other tools as well. For some of our organizations, FIM is required. We'll explain a little more later in the session. But that provides that consistent address list between our online, online tenant and our on-prem organization. From the hybrid perspective, and we run through the hybrid configuration wizard, we will do the steps required to make sure that we have secure mail flow between that on-prem org and the Office 365 tenant. We will take the steps in setting up the organization relationship and the associated sharing policies to ensure that things such as free busy, mail tips, right, the online archive, all of those capabilities will be enabled for us once that hybrid relationship is established. Finally, once these components are in place, you have the ability to do online mailbox moves. We will automatically, in this case, write back information to the on-prem organization to annotate that the mailbox is moved, ensure that the address lists on both sides are up to date, and that we have set the properties of that Active Directory user attribute appropriately to keep that mail flow operational and not lose messages, right, or have timeouts or delays or other things that might occur as we're moving around or changing mail flow attributes inside of the organization. To deploy Exchange Hybrid, it's relatively straightforward. We need an Office 365 tenant. This means you go through the sign-up process for Office 365. This may come as a trial experience. This may be part of your Microsoft Enterprise licensing that you negotiate with us. Once you have that tenant established, you'll have a tenantname.onmicrosoft.com. Most of you do not want to change email addresses, right, as part of your migration, so you'll register your custom domains with Office 365 to show that you own them. We will ask you to register a TXT record in public DNS that proves that you own the domain, and at that point, we'll allow you to modify or make changes with that domain or assign it to users, for example, inside of your Office 365 tenant. At this point, we're able to set up a directory synchronization process. We provide, as part of your Office 365 licensing, the DirSync appliance, basically a subset of FIM. You're on setup, you point it to your tenant, provide some credentials, point it to your on-prem organization, provide some credentials. It will read the required attributes, publish those to Office 365, and keep both sides up to date. From an Exchange perspective, we'll talk about the current version, right, Exchange 2013. You can also deploy hybrid on Exchange 2010. After this session, we hope you'll see why we prefer 2013 from this perspective. Edge is an optional role. We do require the CAS mailbox in 2013 or the CAS hub servers in Exchange 2010 to run through the hybrid compatibility wizard and establish a hybrid relationship. Once those servers are deployed, we have some SSL certificate requirements. We'll use that for both HTTPS and TLS connections. Like we said, we don't want these connections or data flowing back and forth to be unencrypted, so we require public trusted third-party certificates. And now we can go through and run the hybrid configuration wizard. If we look a little deeper inside of this, right, we have an organization, we have an internet-facing site, we have a non-internet or an intranet-facing site in the organization. In this case, we're called Contoso.com. We've established a tenant, mail.contoso.com or our contoso.onmicrosoft.com in the organization, and we're running Exchange 2010. Maybe some Exchange 2007 as well. In this case, we need to apply the latest service packs for Exchange before we introduce Exchange 2013. In that case, it's SP3 RU10. We'll run the patches, and we can then introduce our Exchange 2013 CAS mailbox servers. As we know, right, going through the architecture sessions for 2013, the CAS is really just a stateless proxy. All that CAS business logic as well as mail flow is happening on that multi-role mailbox server at the back end. So now we require that because that's going to encompass both our CAS business logic and our mail flow capabilities from an Exchange 2013 perspective. We go through and properly configure our external URLs and MRS proxy capabilities. Publish that capability to the internet, get some certificates on there, right, and do the publishing process for it. At that point, we can publish it, Georg has a session talking about ARR, right, or our ARR capabilities. You might be using TMG or ISA or UAG in your organization. You may be using your load balancer for this process, but some way to take the VIP that we've got associated with our CAS servers and publish those out to the public internet itself. You can use the Exchange Deployment Assistant to ensure you're following the proper steps for introducing 2013, and once deployed, the Remote Connectivity Analyzer will help you ensure that you have done the proper steps from a certificate perspective, from a publishing perspective, and from a namespace perspective inside of the organization. Once 2013 is published, we'll switch auto-discover to point to our 2013 servers. It will respond or redirect appropriately inside of the organization to ensure that all clients inbound, regardless of where that mailbox is homed, be on-prem 2007, on-prem 2010, on-prem 2013, that that client will receive the proper XML data back to go through the auto-discover and configure itself properly from an Exchange perspective. Once we've went through all these deployment steps, again, Hybrid Configuration Wizard will go through the process for us of establishing this hybrid relationship with our Office 365 tenant. And some animation to show the folks moving up to Office 365. They're very happy. They have their 50 gig mailboxes. They're ecstatic. Some little notes on hybrid. Exchange 2013 will be compatible with all Office 365 tenants. This had a little bit more relevance last year when some of the tenants were on Wave 14, some of the tenants were on Wave 15. We've completed that upgrade process now. All tenants are on Wave 15. We will support Exchange 2003 via Exchange 2010 hybrid. So if you have Exchange 2003 in your organization, we obviously cannot introduce Exchange 2013. However, you can introduce Exchange 2010. Exchange 2010 has hybrid functionality and a hybrid configuration wizard, and we will leverage that to establish hybrid with your Office 365 tenant. If you don't have Exchange 2003, our recommendation is Exchange 2013. The next few minutes, Ronald here will give you some highlights of the history of hybrid, current state, and kind of where it's going, right, to help you understand why this 2013 recommendation. So turn it over to Ronald and hear it from the author, the source.
Thank you, Andrew. So, you know, it's really interesting to see the history of the hybrid wizard. If you attended the sessions from all the way from the keynote to any session you went to, there's always a mention of hybrid. So it's a key strategic bet for Microsoft and in a great, easy way for you to onboard to Office 365. And I'm going to spend some time explaining to you how the engine works or what's behind it or what happens when you actually run the hybrid wizard. But before I go there, it's always fun to see the history of, you know, what the hybrid wizard was before a few years and where we are today. So we started off back in Exchange 2010 SP1, where we published, you know, a huge document, 60 pages long, and Tim here will correct me and say it's 72 pages long. We put a good luck sticker on it and said, go try it out. And a lot of you brave souls actually did try it out. Can I get to see how many people actually followed that manual process? So yeah, so we have some lot of experts in hybrid here. And it was extremely complex to deploy. We had very low adoption, but unfortunately, that's the way it was in 2010 SP1. We learned a lot from it. I personally have gone through these 72 pages of documentation and deployed this, so I know and feel your pain. And that's where we started off in 2010 SP2, where we realized as the product team that if we want to make this easy for customers, we have to have it automated in some way. So that's, you know, you can see the old EMC-based UI here, where, you know, we did a lot of work to automate the commandlets, the sequence of, you know, the 70-plus steps which we have to do in the hybrid wizard and get them in the right order. But we made some lot of infrastructure investments to remove some of the very confusing requirements. And some of you, the guys who raised their hands who did this manually probably remember we had requirements around create this service.contoso.com and exchange delegation.contoso.com for different kinds of requirements. All of them are completely eliminated now, and you know, it's streamlined within the hybrid deployment process and part of the wizard itself. Where we went from there is we introduced, you know, we moved to a whole different web-based UI in Exchange 2013, and we continued investing in the hybrid wizard, where, you know, we had an entire team who built the UI for the hybrid wizard. And we continued all the logic we had in Exchange 2010 from a commandlet perspective and from an engine perspective. But what I want to highlight here, the biggest change we made was a very simplified transport configuration experience. If you're using 2010, you know, there were static IPs which we had to use for scoping down receive connectors. You know, it was not a certificate-based auth for transport. In 2013, we've got rid of all those problems, and the transport or secure mail configuration is all certificate-based now. So it's much more easier to do that configuration in 2013. What happens in SP1, which went out in February? A couple of things. We now support multiple exchange orgs on premises with a single tenant in Office 365. It was one of the biggest asks we have from larger customers. And Andrew, in a later section, will cover all the details on what you need to do to use these new features. And we also support 2013 Edge, which was revived, and now we've added back support for, you know, continuing using that. So, you know, this is the history of where we came from, and you might be wondering, you know, like, are people really using this? What's the state of this? So, you know, in Office 365, using Exchange Hybrid, we have thousands of tenants and millions of mailboxes who have used the Hybrid Wizard to onboard to Office 365, seeing a tremendous increase in the adoption, and it's been a great success so far. So let's talk more about the engine, and when I say the engine, I mean the commandlet update dash hybrid configuration, which the UI calls behind the scene. What really happens there, and why is it important for you to know that? A lot of you, you know, have probably spent some time debugging through issues, or when the hybrid engine failed because of a config issue, you know, it's hard to read the log sometimes to figure out what's going on. And I think I wanted to spend some time to explain that, so that when you have any issue, if you have any issue, you know where to start, and you know, it'll help you debug those issues. So the hybrid config engine, we start off with the desired state. So we ask the customer a series of questions in the hybrid wizard, like, where do you want to go? What servers do you want to be involved in this hybrid configuration process? What domains do you have? And we store all this in an Active Directory object called the hybrid configuration object. And I'll show you how it looks in the demo later on. And this is the desired state. This is where you want to go. And the next step is, when the hybrid configuration wizard is invoked, we read the desired state from memory, and we compute a series of steps we need to go, like, from your current topology, what steps do we need to run to get you to this desired state? And we do that by asking for two sets of credentials. We ask you for your on-premises admin credentials and your Office 365 admin credentials. We open a PowerShell run space to both these environments, and using the desired state and your current topology configuration, we execute a series of steps on both sides of the equation to get you to the desired state. And it's important to know that the hybrid wizard has no more privileges than your tenant admin credentials. So we are just acting on behalf of the tenant or the tenant admin and doing exactly the things you would do from a PowerShell command perspective. So there's no magic behind the scene. We are just running the commandlets in a series of steps, and it's the sequence of steps which is the hardest to get right, and that's what we have automated in the wizard completely. So once you have that, you know, we configure a whole bunch of objects. We configure your accepted domains, your remote domains, you know, your federation relationships, and you know, there are 70 odd steps we run through the hybrid wizard. And that's a summary of how the hybrid engine works. I'm going to give you a short demonstration of how the hybrid wizard actually works, and I have a video for that. So your experience for Exchange Hybrid always starts from your on-premises admin console. So you're on the on-premises admin console, you log in with your on-premises credentials, and the first landing page you will come to is the recipient page, because you've just logged into the Exchange admin console. Before I go into the hybrid process, I wanted to show you what servers we have in this topology. We have two servers. One is the Exchange 2010 server, and there's an Exchange 2013 hybrid server in place. You click on the hybrid tab on the left, and you click on the button enable, and that brings you to a prompt on sign into your Office 365 tenant. So you provide your tenant admin credentials, you log in to Office 365, and you'll come back to on-premises. This is when your hybrid configuration wizard is actually starting. You say, acknowledge that you want to set up hybrid wizard, and you ask you for a domain. There are some DNS records you need to set up. We guide you through that. Then we ask you, what servers do you want to be involved in this process? And do you want to use Edge servers or not? And then we give you some UI to help you select the client access servers which you want to be involved. And the next step is when you ask for what mailbox servers you want to use for this configuration. Both these questions are mainly for secure mail configuration for transport purposes, because that's where we create the send and receive connectors for you as part of the transport configuration. Once you've selected this mailbox server, you click on Next, and what you see is, you know, we ask you for which certificate you want to use. It has to be a public certificate. We do not support self-signed certificates. Important thing to know. And the one additional step is we ask you for a FQDN for where do you want Office 365 to connect to when delivering mail to on-premises. This is the step in which we ask you for the two sets of credentials, for your on-premises credentials, and then you enter the tenant credentials. And this is what we use to create the PowerShell run space on both sides. Once you've entered that, and hopefully you didn't get a typo, you click Update, and that launches the hybrid configuration engine behind the scene on your mailbox server. One very important question thing to keep in mind is the hybrid wizard is designed to be stateless. There is no state. At every run, we look through what is your desired state, what is your current topology, and we get you to the, you know, state you want to be in. So if the engine fails for whatever reason, you can always rerun it. I'll repeat it. If the engine fails, you can always rerun it. There is no state in the hybrid wizard because there's always confusion around, can I really rerun it? Yes, you can. And as you see, we show you progress on the different kinds of settings we update as part of the hybrid wizard. You configure your mail flow, your org relationships, your accepted domains, remote domains, a whole bunch of stuff. And this is an error I'm going to explain in the next slide on what improvements we've made around the auto-discover publishing portions, because it's one of the most common failures we see in the hybrid wizard. But before we go there, I want to show a couple of things we updated as part of the configuration process. First, I want to go to the Exchange Management shell, where I want to show you where do we store the desired state. And you can look at the desired state by running a commandlet called get-hybrid-configuration. And you will see all the inputs we gave in the screen before will show up as like what servers you have, what is the certificate you want to use as properties in this Active Directory object. So you run get-hybrid-configuration, and you will see this is your desired state. This is where you want to go, and this is where the engine got you to this state. The next thing I want to show is if you switch back to EMC, is I want to show you the email address policies which we updated for the recipients. The other common concern customers have is, please don't update my primary SMTP. We've taken that feedback, and we always only update your secondary email address policies. We do not touch your primary SMTP proxy address. So that's the other piece of feedback we got from customers, and we've made that change. And the last thing I wanted to show was that you can switch back and forth now once you've set hybrid on the top nav between Exchange and Office 365, so you have a unified experience for managing your mailboxes on either side. So that's also enabled. And a quick note that if you just ran the hybrid wizard and you want to trigger a manual dir sync, this is the commandlet you need to run on the dir sync box, which is start-online-coexistence-sync. So that's a quick overview, short video of what the hybrid wizard is. It's great that a lot of you have already tried this, but I just wanted to explain how the desired state maps into the complex logic we have built into the engine to get you there. So we are constantly getting feedback both from our support team and from customers directly, and these are the few changes we have made in the past and in recent times, which I wanted to go over. So one of the most common failures we see in the hybrid wizard is customers have not published their auto-discover endpoint correctly. So when Office 365 tries to reach into on-premises to get their federation information, it'll fail. And what we did was we have a best effort configuration now. So if we fail, we try it a couple of times, and then we put in a value which we think should be the right one. So we put the value as autodiscover.youronprem.domain/the SVC endpoint which you need to have. And we clearly say that in the warning which I showed you in the video, that we could not reach your on-premises endpoint, but this is the value we think you should be having, and we have already configured it for you. So, and you can go back to the your autodiscover settings and publish the endpoint correctly. The second piece of feedback we got was, I have lots of accepted domains, and I selected all of them. I have no control over which one you will pick for the auto-discover endpoint. And, we had customers who have hundreds of domains, and it was really hard because we would just pick arbitrarily any domain in that list. It actually used to be the first one, but still it was arbitrary. So we added a flag, autod:, and there's a UI associated with that. If you go to the domain picker, there's a flag now on top where you can say, select this domain as my auto-discover domain, and we'll honor that for all your settings. The third piece of feedback was, again, what I showed you earlier, that we will only update your secondary proxy addresses. We do not touch the primary, so you know, if you have some custom management for your email address policies, like a lot of you do, you are still okay to run the hybrid wizard, and nothing will break from that perspective. The final piece of feedback, and this is something new we did in the just released a few weeks back, is there was a, for every hybrid server you deploy, you needed a product key, obviously, to license it, and to get that license key, you had to call up support. It used to be a long process. It could take days to get the hybrid key, and it was very painful because you have to call up support. You explain what environment you have, what is your tenant, are you a paying tenant or not. All that is gone. We have a website now. You can go there, log in with your tenant, and we will just issue the license key after we verify that you are a paying tenant. So no more calling support. You can just get your key as long as you have a valid paying tenant in Office 365. The couple more things, not many people are aware of this. For every time the wizard runs, we create a log on what we what changes we made to your environment. You can find that in your install location under a particular directory, which I mentioned here, logging/update-hybrid-configuration. The first thing you will see in the log is your desired state, because that could change in every run. Like, you could have made a change and added a server. So we log, this is your desired state. And since we have two PowerShell sessions, one to on-premises and one to Office 365, in 14, we never used to log which session we ran your commandlet in. But in Exchange 2013, now for every run, we log that this commandlet was run in your on-premises session, whereas it was run in Office 365. So it's a good way for you to go and see what changes we made to your environment. I also wanted to explain a little bit more detail on how to get this hybrid key. As I mentioned, the rules are that you have to be a paying tenant. We do not issue the key for a trial tenant. If you go to the Office 365 support page, there's a direct link from there. If you select these drop-downs of Exchange Online, Hybrid, and Obtain Hybrid Edition Product Key, there's a button which will show up, run the troubleshooter, and that will take you to the website for getting the key itself. If you don't want to go through that, you can just go to the aka.ms/hybrid-key, and it'll ask you to log in with your tenant credentials, and in a few seconds, you'll get the hybrid key. So it's just a huge improvement from our perspective to help you onboard faster to Office 365. So that's a bit of history on the hybrid wizard, and we had made a lot of changes in 2013 SP1 to support multi-org exchange with a single tenant in Office 365. And it's a complex process, and that's why we have a whole section which Andrew is going to go over on how to deploy multi-org exchange.
Thank you, Ronald. Watching you go through, I realize that I always get feedback that I talk too fast, and when I see someone do a good, deliberate, this is how it works, right? We'll see if I can remember that for the next 10, 15 minutes. So with Exchange 2010 and RTM Exchange 2013, we had support to configure hybrid relationships. This was limited to either a single forest model. You have a forest on-prem that has live accounts or an account forest and resources in it, such as Exchange, or a classic resource forest model where you had a single Exchange organization, maybe multiple account forests associated with that, and we'd set up hybrid between that Exchange resource forest and your Office 365 tenant. The limiting factor was there's always a one-to-one relationship. Each Office 365 tenant could only have one on-prem Exchange organization associated with that in a hybrid relationship. With Exchange 2013 SP1, as Ronald states, right, the new functionality now allows us to say you may have multiple Exchange on-prem organizations, all configured in a hybrid relationship with your single Office 365 tenant. This allows organizations that have acquired companies or have not consolidated their Exchange organizations into a single organization to still have a very robust environment where we can have true, free, busy, mail flow, single namespace if desired, right, across all of our Exchange organizations and that Office 365 tenant that we introduce into this existing mix of Exchange on-prem organizations. We're calling it multi-org hybrid support. If you went to the DirSync sessions, right, or some of the Office 365 ones, we talk about multiple forest. That's from an account perspective or an authorization perspective. Multi-org support is the ability to have multiple Exchange organizations in a single or in a hybrid relationship with that Office 365 tenant. It's end-to-one. There may be some upper boundary. I don't know if we're aware of what it might be of how many on-prem orgs you could have. At this point, we're not assuming anyone's going to try 20 or 50 or hundreds, for example, right? But you can now have multiple Exchange orgs. We'll walk you through the process and give you an understanding of how this works. We'll start just by kind of showing what the end state goal is here. We've had multiple customers over the last several years with multiple on-prem orgs. One of those organizations decides to migrate or establish a hybrid relationship with Office 365. And what they rapidly found out was that if they had set up coexistence on-prem, meaning that they were doing cross-force, free-busy, and calendar sharing, and secure mail flow, that wasn't transitive to the Office 365 tenant. Meaning that if I'm in Office 365 and I had a hybrid relationship with 2010 or 2013 RTM back to my Contoso organization, that Office 365 user could not query FreeBusy for a Fabricam user, even though I had a FreeBusy relationship with Contoso, and Contoso had a FreeBusy relationship with Fabricam. Our FreeBusy relationships are limited to this one-to-one scenario. So each time we add an organization, we have to set up additional FreeBusy coexistence between that. The missing leg, then, is that ability to have the triangle, right, coming from Office 365 down to Fabricam so that we can have more than one hybrid relationship, therefore more than one free busy relationship between our Office 365 tenant and the on-prem org. This extends also from not just the end user perspective of free busy, but also will extend to things such as secure mail flow and the other benefits that hybrid would provide for us. There is one caveat for this scenario is we can no longer use DirSync as our directory synchronization solution because we cannot have multiple DirSync instances going to the back to the same Office 365 tenant. We also require some custom logic inside of FIM itself to properly update mail recipients as these mail users move between both on-prem organizations and to and from Office 365. So when we have a user, for example, in Fabricam that moves to Office 365, Contoso needs to be aware, right, that that user is now in Office 365, no longer in Fabricam, so that we can route both FreeBusy requests as well as mail flow to that correct final recipient versus where it was prior to that move process taking place. So this is the requirement for FIM. I shouldn't say requirement for them. Technically, it's a requirement for a directory synchronization solution that can manage the attribute flow appropriately. We have one called Forefront Identity Manager, and we're working on providing that guidance for how to configure FIM in this type of scenario or in this relationship. We have some rules when we go to deploy one of these multi-org exchange hybrid scenarios. The first one is that each one of our on-prem organizations must be authoritative for an SMTP namespace. That's how we understand or determine where to route that free busy request for that individual user. We can still share contoso.com across all three, but each individual organization on-prem must have a unique one, and that's how we can route authorization and or free busy requests to those on-prem organizations. If we do have shared namespace configured, such as sharing Contoso across both of our on-prem organizations, we require you to have the mail routing and auto discover published properly for those on-prem orgs prior to going through setting up multi-org hybrid with Office 365. We want to ensure that that process is complete. And as we walk through a couple of animated auto discover slides in a moment, you'll understand why this technical requirement exists. Office 365 is going to use that auto discover information that's published from each organization to make the queries and determine where the user is and how to find that mailbox recipient and do that free busy query or the mail flow for that specific user in the org. We also require Exchange 2013 SP1 for each on-prem organization that's going to be configured in multi-org hybrid. This is not one of the ones that's been backported to Exchange 2010 SP3 and prior. This therefore caveats, right, that we can no longer have Exchange 2003 in one of our on-prem orgs if we want to have multi-org hybrid, because we can only introduce 2013 to organizations that have Exchange 2007 or later. We also, I highlighted it, called out, but just to reinforce it, it's not transitive. Anytime we want to query free busy, we have to have a direct relationship with that organization, whether it's our Office 365 tenant or it's one of the on-prem exchange orgs that we have inside of our environment. The final one and a little caveat is that the public certificate that we use to publish our CAS infrastructure to the internet for AutoDiscover and for Exchange Web Services must have a unique certificate per exchange organization. Office 365, the tenant, is going to rely on the thumbprint of that certificate to establish these relationships. And so if we were using the same certificate across both organizations, it would not be able to understand, in some cases it's talking to Fabricam, in some cases it's talking to Contoso, because the thumbprint would be the same. So Contoso, we can have the same certificate for all of those CAS servers. Fabricam, we can have the same certificate for all those CAS servers, but those two certificates must be unique. They could have the same namespaces associated with them. However, those must be individual certificate requests to have a unique thumbprint associated with those. Before we walk too deep into the multi-org portion, we're going to give you a quick primer on AutoDiscover. It's very simple in a single organization. We have an on-prem org here at contoso.com. We've got a user, Ben Appleby, who has a mailbox inside of contoso.com. And Ben's client wants to configure via AutoDiscover. Ben's client's on the internet. He does a DNS lookup. We harvest the SMTP namespace from Ben's email address of contoso.com and determine via a DNS query that the AutoDiscover endpoint is autodiscover.contoso.com. At that point, Ben's client will send off the AutoDiscover request to that DNS namespace. We at contoso.com have properly published AutoDiscover, meaning that we are not securing AutoDiscover traffic, right? This is published anonymously out to the internet. And we can then return the XML information for Ben's mailbox once he authenticates inside with what's required to configure that client from an AutoDiscover perspective. Relatively straightforward. I think we're all quite aware of the basic concept of AutoDiscover. When we have another exchange organization, we're going to rely on this AutoDiscover process to know what the authoritative forest is for any individual user in that organization. So in this case, we have two forests, contoso.com, fabricam.com. It's not required in multi-org hybrid, but it's very common for us to see a shared namespace across all of those on-prem organizations. So in this case, Forest A is authoritative for Contoso.com. Forest B is authoritative for Fabricam.com, but has the Contoso.com namespace as a shared namespace configured. Same process. In this case, Jan Kristovic goes out, queries AutoDiscover. He has a Contoso.com email address. AutoDiscover returns the DNS FQDN for Contoso.com, right? Where is published by Forest A's CAS infrastructure. In this case, there is a user object for Jan, which has Contoso.com as his primary SMTP address, but has a target address associated of Jan at Fabricam.com. In this case, we'll get a redirect back, goes back to the client, says, well, yes, I have a user called Jan, but actually Jan exists in a different forest, which we know because Jan has a target address value set. And so we'll redirect the client to, again, make a query now for Fabricam.com, which we know is Jan's true location address, right? We get the information back from DNS. We now know to query DNS for Fabricam.com. We reach the CAS environment at Fabricam.com. And because this CAS server has a mailbox object for Jan Kristovic with the at Fabricam.com reply address on it, it will respond with the appropriate XML information for Jan's client to be configured. What we see here, right, is how the user query process for AutoDiscover can be used to determine where the mailbox resides, not where a user object resides. So if we take this concept, we can then replace that user object with Office 365. And now you understand how Office 365 queries to find out where the true mailbox home is for a user versus just a mail user, which has a target address specified. So using the combination of target address plus a reply address, we can use AutoDiscover always to find where the mailbox is in any of the on-prem organizations, regardless of the SMTP domains or number of domains, right, that you have published. We just need each forest to have a single authoritative one that's publishing that information via AutoDiscover out to the internet. So, knowing this from AutoDiscover, right, we therefore in Office 365 and your tenant will associate each hybrid configuration or each hybrid relationship with a single unique AutoDiscover namespace as well as an on-prem Exchange organization. That doesn't have to be the reply address. That can be a secondary address for those users if we're sharing namespaces, but this is how we denote or differentiate in that hybrid relationship which on-prem organization to send those free busy requests or mail flow requests, right, for those mailboxes, for example. This means also that each Exchange organization must have a DNS domain published properly via AutoDiscover. That's how we're going to query and get those redirects to determine where the mailbox for any individual user resides in the organization. Must be published via your Exchange 2013 SP1 CAS servers. That's the one that's going to respond authoritatively regardless of whether that user adds a mailbox on 2007, 2010, or Exchange 2013. If we're sharing namespaces, right, that means that we're doing a directory sync or a gal sync between our on-prem organizations. That means that we're going to have, for every mailbox in Fabricam, we're going to have a mail user object in Contoso. That mail user object will have the primary address of Contoso.com, but a target address of Fabricam.com, so that when users in the Contoso forest email that user, that mail is sent over to the Fabricam.com forest, and it ends up in that user's Fabricam.com mailbox, and mail flow is operational, right, between all of our on-prem organizations. The note down below calls out why we require FIM. We do require some process doing that directory synchronization and maintaining this concept of mail user versus mailbox, because you're likely also to be moving mailboxes over time between the on-prem orgs and Office 365. And so we want the other organizations in your environment to be aware when a user does move to Office 365, right, to update that mail user object with the new Office 365 SMTP namespace and the primary namespace or reply address that that user should have associated. So there is some custom logic that we require in your provisioning system or your directory synchronization solution that's going to keep that at the required attributes up to date across all users inside the org. We took some time to try to, the slide earlier that walked you through how to deploy hybrid, we tried to do the same concept or principle here of how to deploy multi-org hybrid scenarios. Same concept. We have a Contoso.com forest, we have a Fabricam.com forest, and we have an Office 365 tenant. With that Office 365 tenant, we have other capabilities. There's the Azure Active Directory instance. We have the Azure Active Directory authorization capabilities. There's the Office 365 directory, or the GAL, that will be exposed for users in that Office 365 tenant. Step one is to go through and ensure that we have Exchange 2013 SP1 deployed inside of each organization. We require that for the multi-org hybrid deployments with our on-prem orgs. As we walk through the auto-discover portions prior, right, and Ronald also pointed out, one of the most common failure scenarios that we see in hybrid relationships is auto-discover not being published properly to the internet. The wizard no longer fails on that. We just guess what the value should be so you can complete the wizard, but that still has the onus on you to go back and fix and properly publish auto-discover for that respective forest namespace to the public internet. Again, we called out earlier, reinforce it, different public certificates for Contoso than for Fabricam, right? We're going to use a thumbprints on those to uniquely identify the on-prem organization once we create that. Also, we're assuming that you want to have free busy between the on-prem orgs, so a user in Contoso should be able to query a user in Fabricam. That requires a two-way trust. You can do that with service accounts, but now you don't have per-user free busy. So our recommendation is a two-way trust. Our guidance on TechNet will explain the details around that. You'll configure your mail flow on-prem. This is setting up shared namespace between two organizations. Most of you have probably done this, so we've had this capability from some of the earliest versions of Exchange. Once we have our on-prem coexistence created, we can now set up our directory synchronization process with Office 365. This will be the most complex part of your multi-org hybrid deployment. Guidance for this is coming, as we said. It's being worked out right now from our UE experts to publish what that process is for configuring FIM with more than one on-prem Exchange organization, all going back to the same Office 365 tenant. This is different from the Office 365 session by Jono today, talking about multi-forest with multiple tenants, right? This is multiple forest with a single tenant. Once our DirSync, or our directory synchronization solution, has been provisioned and established, we can go through and run the hybrid configuration wizard. We'll run that wizard one time for Contoso and a second time for Fabricam. At that point, we should be able to validate that we have operational mail flow between each respective Exchange organization and a user in Office 365, run through some tests to validate that process. For users moving to Office 365, we'll also need a way to authenticate them. If you use the DirSync appliance, we have the option to DirSync plus password sync, meaning we will copy the password hash from your on-prem organization, rehash it, and store that in Office 365. And the Office 365 tenant can authenticate a user because it has the hash of the on-prem password. No federation solutions required. Unfortunately, we understand we cannot use DirSync with the multi-org hybrid scenario. We're required to use FIM. And the current Azure Active Directory connector for FIM does not have password sync capabilities. This means either we have different passwords in Office 365, or we set up federation on-prem, which enables Office 365 to redirect the authentication back to the localized Active Directory environment. So this requires, from our perspective, ADFS. You can also use a third-party STS or secure token service to provide this federated credential capability for our Office 365 environment. At that point, last remaining piece is just to configure an org relationship between both on-prem organizations, enabling that free busy query to succeed. Those are our steps for configuring an Exchange 2013 multi-org hybrid deployment. Now, each org can move mailboxes back and forth between Contoso and Fabricam, or back and forth to Office 365 from either, or if there's three or more, right, any of the on-prem organizations to Office 365. From a mail routing perspective, Office 365 does not use MX records. We use the connectors that are established via the hybrid configuration wizard to do secure mail flow between your on-prem organization and Office 365. The wizard asks for an FQDN to deliver the mail. Don't use your DNS domain for SMTP, right? You're going to be picking out a set of CAS or hub servers, for example, using the wizard for that process and for mail flow. This is also where you're denoting in the shared namespace scenario. When you're running the wizard in Fabricam, the namespace you choose is Fabricam, not Contoso. Right? We've already set the Contoso namespace to be associated with the Contoso primary org. Fabricam is sharing Contoso, but in the hybrid configuration wizard, we want to specify Fabricam as a namespace to help it understand the differentiation between both on-prem organizations. So, and all on-prem traffic, as we call out, is configured manually. The hybrid configuration wizard does not create your on-prem mail flow and exchange organization relationships for you. You're responsible for doing the cross-forest configuration between Contoso and Fabricam on-prem. There's two namespaces associated with your Office 365 tenants. There's something we refer to as a sign-up domain. That's your custom or vanity domain, right, .onmicrosoft.com. And there's something called a coexistence domain, which is your vanity name.mail.onmicrosoft.com. When we walk through the hybrid configuration wizard, that coexistence domain will be added as a proxy address, and that is how we can authoritatively route mail to recipients who are on Office 365. Their primary address is Contoso or Fabricam or whatever you choose it to be. The wizard will add these secondary proxy addresses so that we have the ability to route mail to users who are on Office 365 once that becomes their primary mailbox location. In this case, right, we must be configured to have the email address policy managed via Exchange. That's how the hybrid configuration wizard modifies the secondary address. If you've unchecked those boxes in Active Directory to not have Exchange manage the proxy addresses, hybrid configuration wizard will update the policy, but the policy won't be applied to the end user objects. You would be responsible for updating your provisioning system in that case to account for the Office 365 namespaces that are required for mail flow. That closes out our capabilities around our concept on how to configure your multi-org hybrid relationships. With that, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Heaney, Supportability PM, who will give you the common issues and how to avoid them, right?
How to avoid them, what they are. Basically, call out some of our mistakes, call out more of your mistakes. more of our mistakes, whatever. Take it how you will. So just talking about some of the common issues we face with setting up hybrid configurations. The hybrid wizard, you know, we have some resiliency built in. We keep making it better and better, as good as we can, to be predictive whenever failures do happen, such as the auto discover fix. But, you know, there's still some things that are required from everybody to make sure their environment's running correctly. So with that being said, we're going to talk about some of the common issues. One of the more recent common issues is something that I've coined as UTO-auth. So this is referring to the fact that one of our features, cross-premises e-discovery, actually uses used to work over a protocol called XTC, which is XSO to the cloud. Basically, it uses an EWS SOAP call. Okay. When we move from 2010 to 2013, that XTC call no longer works. Okay, that has been retired. So there is a new feature called OAuth that it's used in different parts of Exchange. It's used for Exchange to SharePoint integration for site mailboxes and things like that. So it's not really new to Exchange, but it hasn't been used for hybrid. Well, technically, if you wanted to do a cross-premise discovery search, you would be using OAuth. The problem is we didn't have any configuration documentation on it, and it was not part of the hybrid configuration wizard. It's still not part of the hybrid configuration wizard. So we changed it to OAuth, but we didn't tell anybody, and we didn't document it. So
we did now.
Okay. So we did now. And like I said, I wanted to call out our mistakes, okay? And I could fit our mistakes on a half of one slide, and then we're going to get to your mistakes. So, okay, come on. So now we have it documented, and the documentation is actually been revised as recently as 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, something like that. And now it works. So anyway, the documentation's out there to set up e-discovery, cross-premises e-discovery. We talk about the different scenarios, when you need to set this up, when you don't need to set this up, and you can go and use OAuth if you want to today for that. Hoping to make this more easily configurable in the future, but we'll work through that, right? The other thing to mention here is I cannot see cross-premises free busy. So there was, I think, three customers that set up Federation Trust back in Exchange 2010 RTM. Those three customers, if they have not upgraded their Federation Trust to the consumer, to the business instance of the Microsoft Federation Gateway, will not be able to see free busy anymore. So we used to have a consumer instance of the Federation Gateway. It was used by Live at EDU, and it was used by Exchange 2010 RTM for Federation Trust. With SP1 of 2010, we started using the business instance of the Microsoft Federation Gateway. That's what Exchange Online uses. That's what most customers use when they have a Federation Trust. But I'm just calling out that the old Federation Gateway was retired very recently at the end of February. So if you do, by chance, have two organizations that are sharing free busy between each other, and all of a sudden that stopped working, just make sure that they're not on the retired Federation Gateway. If they are, go to the article, refresh it, and get them on the new gateway. It's easier anyway. Another issue that we've run into is the hybrid configuration fails, and it fails with an error that says the length of the product key is too long. The length of the property is too long. What this has to do with is the name, the TLS certificate name, is over 256 characters in length. There's a few ways to solve this problem. One is to get a shorter company name. The other is to get a new certificate with less characters, right? So there is no solution for it as of yet. Did we verify that? Is still the case?
It's coming.
Okay. Yeah, so it's still in the coming phase. So we have a document that discusses that you do need a shorter, a KB article that discusses that you do need to get a certificate with a shorter character length and rerun the wizard with that certificate in place. But the idea is that soon you will see that this will not be an issue any longer. We're just waiting for a schema update to get deployed, and then it'll be fixed. So you should see this go away very quickly, and some of you might already see it gone. Anyway, so this is something that's being addressed. Another common issue is, how do I configure my firewall to allow HCW? So this is such a common issue that we actually, that AutoDiscover feature that Ronil and Andrew talked about, where we predict the AutoDiscover endpoint, a lot of that was because of timeouts in the hybrid configuration wizard, okay? Or failure to detect the AutoDiscover or connect to that AutoDiscover endpoint. Well, that's because the AutoDiscover endpoint isn't published correctly through your firewall or your TMG. Maybe you set up pre-authentication, whatever it is. You need to make sure that you have your firewall properly configured so that you have no pre-auth at the AutoDiscover SVC endpoint. You have no pre-auth at the EWS Exchange ASMX WS security endpoint. And you have no pre-auth at the MRSproxy.svc endpoint. If you do have pre-auth, you should expect things to fail. Okay? The good news is the hybrid configuration wizard won't fail. The bad news is all the features for hybrid will continue to fail unless you publish it correctly. So getting that firewall configured correctly, it's key. We're always working on trying to make our diagnostics, things like RCA, you know, be able to detect the different issues with this, but know in the back of your mind that you should definitely make sure that you go through this wonderfully written wiki, anyway, to configure your firewall correctly. Another common issue is when somebody has an intrusion detection system configured in their environment. An intrusion detection capability, or a device with intrusion detection capability, such as TMG, it has flood mitigation settings. Those types of things, if you're are there to basically prevent, you know, type denial of service types of attacks, right? It says, hey, if a ton of the connections come in, we're going to consider that from one IP address, say, we're going to consider this thing, some type of attack, and we're going to shut it down. That's the whole idea of an intrusion detection flood mitigation settings, right? Well, when we're doing large mailbox moves and we're moving a whole bunch of data, this isn't going to be happening for free busy requests, most likely. But when we're doing large chunks of data, well, we make a whole lot of connections, right? When we make all these connections, sometimes we could be seen as evil, okay? Microsoft being seen as evil, I know, crazy, right? But we could be seen as evil. The idea is you should make sure that you
change your rules or allow more connections from those trusted IPs, the ones that we're using in Exchange Online, and we document our IP addresses, and we keep them up to date sometimes, so that you can actually perform your moves and not be knocked down by an intrusion detection system or something like that. Okay? So definitely make sure you check that out. Some of the errors, you know, things you'll see is that my moves fail intermittently, you know, moves keep starting over, those types of things. A lot of times that has to do with...
I was going to add in, when we talk to customers about onboarding, one of our recommendations is to bypass IDS IPS systems, which may seem like a difficult or challenging security conversation to have. The caveat is all of this traffic is encrypted. They're not inspecting any of it anyway, right? And so that helps that security conversation to say, look, we're passing 100% encrypted traffic. You're not able to see the content of that. What value is that IDS IPS providing besides adding risk into your migration effort when it starts to throw errors?
All right. The hybrid configuration wizard failed to complete. If at first you don't succeed, try and try again. So Ronil talked about this. We're not against you running the hybrid configuration wizard a second time. This was much more prevalent in Exchange 2010 than it is in Exchange 2013 because we keep improving the timeout issues and things like that. But, you know, the hybrid wizard is doing a whole bunch of stuff in the background. I almost said junk, but it's none of it's junk. It's all really important stuff, right? It's doing all this stuff in the background. And, you know, some of those things sometimes time out. We're communicating with different sites. A lot of stuff happened in the background. A lot of times, if you run that wizard a second time, it will succeed. So there's nothing wrong with running a wizard a second time before you throw up the white flag and call support. So, just a good idea to run it twice. We're going to continue to work on the timeout issues, continue to make it better, but in the meantime, just give it a second or third try, and then throw up that white flag. Invalid URI is another error that we get when we run the hybrid configuration wizard. The invalid URI passed basically is saying that you have a domain that is on a block list that we have, and you might say, where is this list? Well, this list is not a physical list. It's not anything I've ever seen, okay? But we do have this mystical, magical, hidden list in Microsoft of names that we prevent from going into the Microsoft Federation Gateway without excluding it, okay, without setting up an exception. You know, some things are obvious. Like, we don't want people to be able to spoof a bank, right? So if you got the word bank in there, you know, we won't let you create a Federation Trust without getting an exception. And bank is just one small example. There's a whole bunch of different things that we block, right? Just so that we try to protect from that type of spoofing, okay? Also, if there's profanity in your name, and sometimes it's fun to try to find the profanity by doing a proximity search, but yeah, sometimes there's a little bit of profanity in a company name, and they don't even realize that we point that out to them with this error message. We can still get them on the exception list, but they have to call in and we have to verify that it's not something crude or anything like that. So anyway, not much you could do about that from a customer side, but it is something that we have, you know, capability of getting past. Federation information could not be retrieved. What this means is when we ran get federation, so that's another error you get when you run the hybrid configuration wizard. When you run get federation information, we do an auto discover request to the SVC endpoint. If the IIS handler mapping is missing, so the IIS handler mapping is there to say, hey, when you get a call with this authentication type to this endpoint, I want you to handle it in this specific way, or I want this actual DLL to take action on it. If that handler mapping is missing, then we get a 405 method not allowed error in the IIS log, and basically our hybrid configuration get federation information call fails, and we get federation could not be retrieved or received for the environment in the hybrid configuration log and in the UI. The way to fix this is to recreate your handler mapping. So you do the service model reg.exe. Anyway, you go through the article, you recreate your handler mappings. I actually have no idea why this happens. It happens randomly in environments. There's got to be a sequence that I'm not finding. So if anybody knows a sequence, hit me up later. Anyway, it's easy to fix. So if you get that 405, it's probably because your handler mappings are missing. The next one is the hybrid server cannot access the Microsoft Federation Gateway. One of the things you need in order to create a hybrid configuration is you need that hybrid server, the one you're running the hybrid configuration wizard from, the one that's doing that logic, to be able to communicate externally. So some people have an outbound proxy configured. That outbound proxy you need to make sure is configured on the Exchange server with the set-exchange server internet web proxy parameter so that it can communicate out. In 2010, that server that needed the communication out was your CAS server, okay? Your hybrid configuration, wherever you're running the hybrid configuration wizard from, that CAS server. In 2013, it's the mailbox server, okay? Because that's now where all of our logic lives, right? CAS server is just a stupid little proxy, right? Don't tell CAS people that, but anyway. Anyway, we keep a list of recommendations for inbound and outbound proxying. We have a blog on it, and we keep a list. We do keep a pretty proper list now of IP address and URLs that we use for Office 365. So that'll be in the slides that you guys get. Okay, another issue. If you are a cloud user looking up an on-premises 2010 user's free busy, and that 2010 user is in an intranet site, you need to make sure that the external EWS URL on that intranet site CAS server has the external EWS URL is specified. Now, what would you specify it to? You would make it the 2013 external URL site, you know, address, but it has to be specified. This is something that you would have done if you properly introduced 2013 into your 2010 environment anyway, because for Outlook Anywhere to work and for shared mailbox access to work and all that stuff, you would have set Outlook Anywhere up in the intranet site to have all the URLs, you know, with all the URLs for the internet-facing site. If you didn't follow it correctly, you should go through the Exchange Deployment Assistant so that you don't do that again, and make sure you set that external URL for EWS. If you don't do it, FreeBusy won't work. We got 3 minutes till lunch, so I'm going to speed through these guys. Okay. Migration didn't complete. Bad password. These are common issues that we see. If you're running the, this is a different one. So if you're moving a mailbox from on-prem to Office 365, when you move the mailbox, if you use the EMC to move the mailbox, and we have any errors during the initiation of that move, it'll look like it went through fine, but it actually won't, okay? It potentially won't. If you put a bad password in there, it'll look like it went through fine. Hey, it went away, but, you know, EMC looks like it, you know, moved the mailbox just fine, but no move actually happened in the background. The problem is we don't have good, we don't return good error logic in the EMC when you do a move against a WAV 15 tenant. So what you should do is go to your WAV 15 tenant and initiate the move from there. You should always move, if you have a WAV 15 tenant, you should always initiate the move from EAC in Exchange Online, okay? You're going to get the best experience, you're going to get the best error experience. If you have a bad password, it'll tell you, hey, you have a bad password, fix it. So go to EAC. Another issue that is not really an issue anymore, FreeBusy information couldn't be retrieved. We used to have an issue where from WAV 15 to 2010 on-prem, if you set the target sharing EPR is a value that we have so that you don't have to rely on auto-discover. So you could say, hey, whenever you're doing a FreeBusy request, I want you to use this target sharing EPR. You'd set it in the org relationship so that we would use a specific EWS endpoint. If you had a 2010 server on-prem as your hybrid server, FreeBusy requests from cloud to on-prem would fail if you set the target sharing EPR. Very recently, we put a build out that actually fixes that, and now you can set the target sharing EPR so that you don't have to rely on auto-discover. Just because we fixed that doesn't mean we test against that, though, and it doesn't mean we want you to do that. You should have auto-discover working properly, but there's times for troubleshooting and things like that where this target sharing EPR could be important. This is OWA redirection. OWA redirection did not work. In a hybrid environment, if you had 2013 hybrid, you wouldn't get redirected from on-prem to Office 365 if your mailbox was moved up until CU3. If you don't have CU3, install CU3. Problem gone. Same thing with these two things. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them because if you're updated, you would not see these issues anymore. But there was missing steps. Basically, the hybrid configuration wizard in 2010, if you're running it against a WAV 15 tenant before RU3, SP3 RU3, It wouldn't give you the domain proof string, so you'd have to pop out and go to the get federated domain proof from the shell. You don't have to worry about that anymore if you have at least RU3 installed. And you would also have problems doing different administrative tasks with trying to manage your hybrid configuration wizard. Both of those things have been fixed in RU3. And the last point I have is if you're doing organization management, if you're doing organization management, you used to see that you had an organization management setting in EMC. If you have a Wave 1510, you'll see that the organization management section is gone. That's because a 2010 EMC cannot manage a Wave 1510. Okay? The 2010 EMC wasn't built to manage the newer stuff. So where do you manage it from? Crazy enough, you go to EAC in the cloud, and you can get the wonderful management experience that we have out there to manage your modern environment. Okay? Sorry about speeding through those last few, but you guys look hungry. So in summary, Exchange 2013 is fantastic. It brings you a whole bunch of new features. All these new hybrid mail flow options, you know, the edge support, the multi-forest support, all the different things that we've fixed along the way are there in 2013 Hybrid Configuration Wizard. So use the darn thing. And if you want, you can join us for a session at 12:10 this afternoon, so in about 10 minutes in the lunchroom in the MVP lounge area. We're going to be there if you guys want to talk to any of us about any of this stuff. So we'll be there for about a half hour from 12:10 to 12:40.
Thank you. Fill out your evals. We forgot to remind you. Shoot.
That is not true.